Hiring for your small business? If you're not looking for professionals on LinkedIn, you're looking in the wrong place. That's like looking for your car keys in a fish tank. LinkedIn helps you hire professionals you can't find anywhere else, even those who aren't actively searching for a new job but might be open to the perfect role. In a given month, over 70% of LinkedIn users don't even visit other leading job sites. So start looking in the right place. With LinkedIn, you can hire professionals like a professional. Post your free job on linkedin.com/achieve today.
One size fits all seems like a good idea for clothes until you try them on. Same goes for healthcare. That's why United Healthcare offers flexible, budget-friendly coverage for medical, vision, dental, and more. Learn more at uh1.com.
Hello and welcome to Breaking Down Bad Books, a podcast analysing trashy bestsellers from a literary perspective, and today we're looking at Allegiant the movie, which is really just part one of a two-parter that never came to fruition. This movie was, okay, one, the worst movie I've ever seen in my whole entire fucking life, and two, a half of the book, and even then, like, they took so many liberties. I was like, I don't even think this is an adaptation. And usually I'm like, oh, they made changes, but it's for the better. But no, this is somehow even worse than the book. I don't know if they're trying to, like, con us into thinking that this was the intended ending, because, like, I'm looking at the synopsis and it says, Beatrice Pryor and Tobias Eaton venture into the world outside of the fence and are taken into protective custody by a mysterious agency known as the Bureau of Genetic Welfare. Okay, yeah, that's fair enough. In the third and final part of the Divergent series. It ain't final. I was trying to do some Googling on this, and apparently this was such a flop that they didn't even make the second part, and I think a lot of it was filmed, and they were like, we'll just make it a TV show. And then the TV show got cancelled before it even aired. I mean, talk about ruining a franchise. And looking at the names in this movie, like, there's some good names. Jeff Daniels is in this one. You've got Naomi Watts. You've got Octavia Spencer. Like, you have good actors in this, and it's shit. It is a shit, shitty, shit film full of shit. So let's get into it. So it starts with a voiceover of Triss's ancestor, with that video of her explaining that the whole Chicago experiment was an experiment. So that's pretty much the same. And I think the last movie ended with, like, all of the villagers in Chicago that we never interact with, like, watching that video. And they were like, oh man, let's leave the city. And they were all heading for, like, a gap in the fence. And you were like, okay, so they're going to leave the city. But no, so this starts with them, like, closing the gap in the fence. Well, I guess it's a part of the fence that's a wall, and they lift up the wall. At least there's a wall or a fence, because, you know, in the book, it got a little bit unclear whether the fence still existed. So at least there's still a fence. And then Triss isn't in prison. She's just floating around doing her thing. I'm pretty sure she started off the book in prison. Then they got her out of prison and she was with Kara, and Kara doesn't exist anymore either. And remember how there was that whole subplot with the Allegiant, like, trying to recruit her? Like, they put a hood over her head and they were like, come meet us at the Merciless Mart tonight, blah, blah, blah. And then she's like, who are these people? And then they're like, surprise, it's Kara, and I've formed a faction called the Allegiant. Like, that's not even in this. And this movie's called Allegiant, and we're just skipping over that whole Allegiant subplot until, like, halfway through the movie when Joanna, she's like, oh, by the way, I'm leading the Allegiant. Like, how are you going to have a movie called Allegiant and just, like, skip over the Allegiant? So Triss is just wandering free in the factionless area, which is still run by Evelyn and some other guy with, like, a mohawk. Is he meant to be the one from the first book that got stabbed in the eye by Peter? Or is he a new character? Is he a composition of multiple characters? I don't know. Anyway, they're doing a kangaroo court style trial of the erudite people, not of Triss. Triss isn't on trial here. And they're putting this guy called Max on trial, like we care who Max is. And the trials are being run by Jack Kang, another character who I thought might have died. Did he die in Insurgent, or did he just have nothing to do in Allegiant? But I don't know, in the movies he's still alive. So Triss is just floating around scot-free, and Caleb's also in prison, and the prisoners are watching the trial. They've got, like, box seats to the trial. Did you guys notice that? If you've watched it, did you notice that? The trial's happening in this area, and then, like, up above, the prison cells are just, like, built into the wall. Anyway, so Max, under truth serum, he's just like, yeah, we did what we did. I'm all team Janine, and it was for the greater good. And then the crowd are like, kill him, kill him, kill him. And Joanna steps up and she's like, you know what? Maybe we should show some grace. As an Amity representative, even though the factions don't exist anymore, let's give them some grace. Janine's regime's dead. Let the vitriol die with Janine. And then Evelyn's like, nah. Evelyn's like, you know what? Actually, that's a good idea. You know what else we could do? We could kill them. And so she's just like, yep, let's execute him. And then they execute this Max guy, who I still don't know who he is, by the way. And so that's enough to make Joanna be like, all right, well, peace out. This isn't my vibe. And so she walks out, presumably to go and form the Allegiant. There's no smashing of the ceremonial bowls. We've left that in the past. And also, I think either Zeke or Uriah goes with Joanna, but I don't think that character even gets any lines of dialogue. The whole Uriah in a coma subplot, gone. Really, once they get to the Bureau, the book gets thrown out the window. So that execution seems to have also spooked Triss and Tobias, and they're like, maybe we should leave and go outside of the fence. But before they do that, they've got to break Caleb out of prison. So Tobias gets Caleb out of prison, just, you know, the usual way, just walking into the cell and taking him out. Security has not been increased in the adaptation, let me just say that. So he just walks Caleb out, but then as they're outside, a couple of the other soldiers from Factionless are like, wait a minute, sorry to bother you, but like, I think the erudite prisoners need to be locked up. And Tobias is like, oh yeah, totally. Don't worry about this one. And he pushes Caleb into a ditch and just like shoots bullets into the ground. And the Factionless guys are like, oh, all right, well, okay, you clearly killed him. Even though I can't see a body and I didn't see any bullets going into the body, we trust you. You clearly killed that guy in that ditch that's not visible to us. And so then they're just like, all right, bye. And of course he didn't shoot him. And it's like, are we meant to be like getting fooled by this? Like, of course he didn't shoot Caleb. You know, so Caleb's like, thanks. And he says, don't thank me. It was your sister's idea. And I don't think it was. Because where we left off, Triss was like, I don't know him anything. And we know from the books that she don't like him. And she's still very surly towards Caleb, but she also sort of lets it go. In the movie, at least, she's like, she doesn't have as much baggage as book Triss. So Triss, Tobias, and Caleb are like, let's go over the fence. And Peter, he rocks up and he's like, you know what? I'd like to come. And they're like, oh, Peter, we hate you. And he's like, yeah, well, if you don't let me in, I'm going to scream. And they're like, fine. So then that's how Peter gets to be with them. So they're in a car and they go to that section of the wall that opens up to let cars through. And the guard there as well is like, oh, I didn't know there were going to be any prison transfers today. It's like, prison transfers? Where are we transferring that prisoner to? Is there a second prison that's outside of the fence that we don't know about? Are we going to a different city? He's like, oh, why would you be transferring this prisoner today? I know we do prison transfers, but today, that's weird. But then Christina, she's like, oh, I've got the papers right here. And so she just runs over and hands a different security guard, like a leaflet, just like a sheaf of papers. I don't think there's anything written on them. There's like little scribbles and doodles on them. And he just stares at it and she's like, what, are you going to stand there and read all day? And he's like, oh no. Like, oh, I don't want to be seen to be reading. So he's like, go ahead. I don't know how she bamboozled him. Is she doing a Jedi mind trick? She's like convinced him that there's like prison transfer papers there. But like there's no prison to transfer to. It's wild. So they just get let out. And then that angry Mohawk boy, he's like, we need to get after them. We need to get after them. There's no prison transfers. So stupid. So they're like, they're letting Caleb, the prisoner, escape. Let's get him. And, oh, okay, they're not actually even through the fence / wall. Their whole thing is they're now going to scale the fence with Tori. They're only bringing along Tori so someone can die. This is the one thing I do like in the film, actually. Just, like, this is a bit exciting, this chase scene, because remember in the book it was just, like, in a field and it was pitch black at night and they were just leaving the Amity farm. This is a bit more exciting. So they're climbing the wall with a grappling hook. That's the pretty long grappling hooks. And they get to the top and it's like, yeah, hey, they did it. But then Tori gets shot. I mean, Tori, you weren't long for this world, duh. So then they're going down the other side and they're in like a canyon. I'm not too familiar with the Chicago geography, but apparently there's a big canyon near Chicago and they're scaling down there. And then it's wild. we're in like a normal landscape, like a canyon landscape, but like it still looks like Earth, you know what I mean? And then like next minute, we're on Mars. I don't know how to explain it, but they're on the red planet. And I don't know how this red planet wasn't visible from the top of the fence where they just were and everything looked normal, but there's like a little patch of greenery and then they're in the desert, and not just normal desert, like blood rain desert. It rains blood. Rivers of red water are flowing everywhere. And it's like, what is this? So we're in a full apocalyptic nightmare zone. And Caleb's like, this kind of looks radioactive. And Peter's like, yeah, there must have been like full on nuclear war out here. Which of course is way different to the books where it's just them heading towards an airport. And I don't know how long they walk for, but they're walking, walking, walking. Then they need to have a break because there's blood rain. And they go into like this warehouse for cover, and yet they're all still standing in the rain because like clearly there's a hole in the roof. So it's like, well, why bother with the cover at all? It doesn't make sense to me. And it's at this point that I would have turned around and said, you know what? I'll deal with the factionless. I'd even prefer abnegation. Sign me up for abnegation life than hanging around in blood rain. Like, ugh. So then they're walking, walking, walking. And then the Mohawk boy, in like a slow-mo shot, his car like drives over them and they're looking up like, huh? And he's like, I gotcha. I don't know where he's been for the past like 5 hours, but he's like, I gotcha. So they're running away from him in the Jeep. But then as they're running, like this weird thing happens where they realize they've been in like a dome of drones. There's been some like camouflage drones presenting like a false background. And then that parts, and there's all these like soldiers and spaceships. Spaceships. I was not expecting to see spaceships in an adaptation of Allegiant where they just hung out in an airport. And the most technology we saw was like a Boeing 787. Remember that ratty little airport that Tris took a joyride in? Well, now they've got spaceships and other little drone pod thingies. They throw a little disc frisbee thing at them, and this took me out. From the little disc things that hovers above their heads, they get enveloped in some sort of like cybernetic goo, which lifts them up and attaches them to the outside of the spaceship. And so then once they're like in this goo, they're attached to the spaceship and they're floating over Mars or whatever red planet we're on. And at one point, Tris even spins around as if she's sitting on a rotating chair. And it's like, no, babe, you're suspended in digital goo. And I could not believe it. I could not believe it. In all of my CGI green screen nightmares, I would never have expected to see this. Like, if you haven't watched the movie, you're just listening to the recap, I think you think I'm probably lying. But no, they actually get picked up by cybernetic goo, and then they head over towards the airport, which is a green area again. I guess they've got some irrigation system or something. And it doesn't even look like an airport. So I don't know why they have to specify that, oh, this used to be Chicago's O'Hare Airport. It's like, well, it's just any old space post at this point. Like, what the fuck? And Jeff Daniels is watching them. He's David. He's watching them arrive in their space goo. Like, could we not have just put them inside the spaceship? I don't know why they had to be in the goo outside of the spaceship. And then the goo levitates them down onto the tarmac. And Bill Skarsgård from It, he's like, oh, welcome. Let's get you into decontamination. And all of the people around are like, oh, my God, that's Tris. Oh, my God, that's Four. They're from Chicago. Because apparently everyone's been watching them like the Truman Show. Not just the people in the Bureau have been watching them, but, like, I think we're led to believe that, like, everyone's been watching them. They're all just super invested in their stories. What? And one of the guys like, oh, welcome to the future. And so I think we're actually in like the year 3000 or some bullshit. Oh, well, we can't be that far ahead because again, the Ferris wheel was still up and running. But like, there's been some serious, serious time going by if this is what the outside world looks like and we've got spaceships. And so, okay, they've got to go to decontamination. So they get naked and they have to burn their clothes and they go into this like, I don't know, this chamber. And then they get more goo shot at them. Like, this goo just, like, completely covers Tris. CGI, of course. I mean, it looks fake as fuck. And then they wash it off like slime. And then that did the trick. And then they all get a personal barcode on their wrist and some nice snazzy new singlets and tracky pants. And then they meet at the other end of the spaceship. And they're like, oh, that was weird. And they're like, yeah, it was decontamination. But I don't know why the decontamination's necessary. Because then they see like a PowerPoint presentation, like a little montage of world events explaining the purity war and genetic manipulation and shit. But they never mention like why they need to be decontaminated. That just never gets brought up. And I'm like, okay, well, all right. Well, now they've just been watered down in goo, cleansing goo, as if they do come from another planet. And it's like, no, you just came from Chicago. You were walled off in Chicago. And now you've got to be decontaminated? Like, what the what? And so this is when they get shown to their dorm and everyone around them's like, oh my God, you're famous, you're famous. There's like kids being like, are you four? And he's like, yeah. And they're like, oh my God, it's four. And that's when Pennywise says, yeah, well, actually our surveillance system is centuries ahead of what you would have experienced in Chicago. You know, the old camera setup. So they go into like little pod machines that inserts them into the Chicago experiment and they can see it going around them. So they don't actually need cameras and microphones, which is another big departure from the book. Do you think the person just writing this screenplay was like, you know, the book's dumb. Let's jazz it up a bit with some technological advancements. It's just crazy. So then Triss goes to meet Jeff Daniels, aka David, and she has to get everywhere by scanning the barcode on her wrist. And apparently she's got like full access privileges because she's genetically pure. And she's not just genetically pure. She's the only one that's genetically pure. And even Triss is like, David, that doesn't make any sense. There's lots of divergent people. And he's like, yeah, but you're genetically pure. And she's like, okay. And she just rolls with it. And I'm like, why? Can we not narrow in on the definition? Like, what's the difference between divergent and genetically pure then, doll? Like, David, can you give me the dates? How is Triss so special? And Pennywise is like, Chicago is just one of 50 major cities that used to exist. So, okay, there's more than 50 cities in the fucking world, idiot, but yeah, okay. And she's like, wow, okay. And he's like, yeah, but a lot of them are just like, you know, dumps now because of all the war, which is why we're doing this great big experiment to get pure people. And she's like, what? Actually, she doesn't even say what. She has no follow-up questions. She's just like, okay. And so David's like, it's a pleasure to meet you. You must have so many questions. And she's like, yeah, not really. She's like, nah, not a one. Couldn't think of a single question. And so then David's like, oh, Triss, I watched when you were born. I've watched your childhood. I've watched you grow into this woman who you are right now. And I'm like, what? Like, why was he so focused on her from the jump? Is he putting that level of attention onto everybody in Chicago? Because we didn't know she was special until just recently. I mean, yeah, he maybe was stupping her mum. But, like, he seems overly invested in this Triss. So then he explains all about the genetically damaged and the purpose of the Bureau, blah, blah, blah. It still doesn't make sense. Even in the adaptation, they were like, there's no way for it to make sense, so let's just repeat what Veronica Roth said and hope no one questions it. And instead of giving her a journal that her mum wrote, he gives her memory tabs. And so when she puts the memory tabs on, she can then see her mum's memories. It's like, what?
This is Paige, the co-host of Giggly Squad, and I want to tell you about a company that I've been loving, Olive & June. Olive & June gives you everything that you need for a salon-quality manicure in one box. And if you break it down, it really comes out to $2 a manicure, which is absolutely insane. It's also so easy to get salon-worthy nails at home with Olive and June. The difference between how your nails used to look when you did them yourself and now with the Manny system is a complete game changer. The best thing about Olive and June, too, is it's a quick dry. It dries in about 1 minute, lasts for 5 days, and full coverage in up to 1 to 2 coats. Visit oliveandjune.com/perfectmanny20 for 20% off your first system. That's oliveandjune.com/perfectmanny20 for 20% off your first system.
I'm Sandra, and I'm just the professional your small business was looking for. But you didn't hire me because you didn't use LinkedIn Jobs. LinkedIn has professionals you can't find anywhere else, including those who aren't actively looking for a new job, but might be open to the perfect role, like me.
In a given month, over 70% of LinkedIn users don't visit other leading job sites. So if you're not looking on LinkedIn, you'll miss out on great candidates like Sandra. Start hiring professionals like a professional. Post your free job on linkedin.com/achieve today.
There's never been a faster or easier way to start your weight loss journey than with PlushCare. PlushCare accepts most insurance plans and gives you online access to board-certified physicians who can prescribe FDA-approved weight loss medications like Wegovy and Zepbound for those who qualify. Take charge of your health and speak with a board-certified physician about a weight loss plan that's right for you. Get started today at PlushCare.com/weightloss. That's PlushCare.com/weightloss. PlushCare.com/weightloss.
Everyone knows therapy is great for solving problems, but getting therapy has its own problems too, like finding the right therapist, fitting into their schedule, and of course, the cost. Well, BetterHelp can solve those problems. It's totally online and built around your schedule. It's surprisingly affordable too. Connect with a credentialed therapist by phone, video, or online chat, all from the comfort of your home. Visit BetterHelp.com to learn more and save 10% on your first month. That's BetterHelp, H-E-L-P.
Memory tabs? We're really doing memory tabs? It's like the filmmakers are like, we need to make everything visual. We can't have a flashback from her reading a journal. We've got to put memory tabs on her. And so then she puts on the memory tabs, and it's like she's stepped into her mother's body, and she's experiencing everything as her mother, but she's also experiencing it as Triss. So like all of her mother's friends are like running away in terror, and Triss is like slowly processing it. So she stops and looks in a mirror, and she sees that she looks like her mum, and then she's walking out, and I'm thinking, did that really happen? Like, it seems like Triss has autonomy in where she's walking, but she's meant to be reliving it as her mother. And I don't think those are the steps that her mother took. Anyway, so they're getting raided. It's all a bit confusing, honestly. So I guess that's the Fringe. And she gets kidnapped. But then there's like a second level of raid by the soldiers. And they're like, oh, don't worry, you're safe now. We'll protect you. And so then they just get kidnapped by the soldiers. And everyone seems to be fine with that. And then we hear how her mum went into the experiment voluntarily, blah, blah, fucking blah. It's still so stupid. And then we cut to Triss is telling Four about how amazing it was to have memory tabs on. And it looks like they're now actually at a part of the old airport because I can see like boarding gates. I thought the whole airport was refurbed from like the look of it. It looks super schmick and not like an airport. But no, they've found a section that is completely derelict and looks like an airport from 200 years ago. Don't know why no one at the Bureau has decided to close that section off or maybe like jazz it up, but there's like lights dangling from the ceiling. And I'm like, we couldn't have gotten a crew in to just take out the lights. Seats are toppled over. And I'm like, what? Who's doing the refurb of this airport? It doesn't make sense. And then Four, he meets Neets with the receipts, except she doesn't have receipts in the movie. She's just a boring old little side character with no motivations of her own. If you were looking for like an impassioned rebel, nah, you're not going to get it here. Just a boring old character who just happens to be called Nita. Then Peter and Caleb are getting recruited to just watch what's going on in the city in the little pods. They're meant to watch what Evelyn's doing and then file a report. And Peter's like, I just got out of Chicago. I don't want to go and experience life in Chicago again. But the executive's like, well, either that or the Fringe. And he's like, okay, like, whatever. So that's just like a schlocky way for them to show us what's going on in the city, even though we could just, you know, cut to the city and we could just experience it as a viewer. But no, like the only way we can see it is through Caleb's eyes for some reason. So now Caleb's walking through Chicago, unseen like a ghost, having a train get run through him and him like, wow, I'm invisible. Like all that fucking stuff. It's really tedious to watch. And then there's like a training montage with Neets and Tobias going out into the Fringe. And she's like showing him all the new gun technology that they have and all these little spinning little disc things. You know what? Everything is just a drone. Everything they're doing, they just explain it with a little disc that's a drone. It's a laser. It's a shield. It's just everything they want it to be. It's just a little disc. Meanwhile, David's having like private lessons with Triss, but I don't know what he's doing. They're just standing in a room and talking, really. He's like done a couple of brain scans on her and that's it. And it's like, well, her brain's not got anything to do with it. So jeans. I was zoning out. You know, I was watching it and I was zoning the fuck out. I was second screening. I was checking TikToks. I was not feeling the vibe of this CGI mess monstrosity. And so then we step into the city and we see Evelyn and Joanna trying to have peace talks. And that's when we see that Joanna's like formed the Allegiant and they're willing to arm themselves. But and then it makes me think, like, if they're only seeing the city through those little surveillance pods, like, how do the kids in the Bureau know who Four is? They were like, Four. And they were like, we've been watching you for years. And it's like, well, are the kids in the surveillance pods? Like, what? How's this getting broadcast to the kids? I don't know. So Four's doing fringe raids and Triss is doing these lessons with David and the tensions in the city are building, like, blah, blah, fucking blah. Christina and Four sort of clock the fact that these soldiers are going into the fringe, memory wiping the kids and then kidnapping them. And he says to Neitz, and he's like, wait a minute, I thought we were vaccinating these kids. This was like a humanitarian mission. And Neitz is like, no, idiot. And so she's aware of what's going on, but I don't know if she really cares that much. They had a great chance with this movie to just not bring the memory virus element into it, but no, okay, memory serums are still the star of the show. So, yep, people are dying in the city and getting memory wiped out in the fringe. Uriah actually does get a line of dialogue while he's mobilizing the troops to move against Evelyn, so good for Uriah. And so then David's taken Triss on a joyride in a spaceship. Like, they're just driving around in spaceships? What? And Four's ruffled too many feathers. It seems like they're trying to get rid of him. Four thinks they're taking him back to Chicago at his request, but no, they're not. They're getting ready to dispatch him. And Four's like, well, I'm not going to agree to that. So he fights back. I think Pennywise helps him. I don't know if Pennywise is a good character or a bad character. I really don't give a shit. But at least they're making it clear quite quickly that David's the new villain. So that spaceship that Four's on crash lands out in the desert. And so then David's taken Triss to some place called Providence. I don't know if it's a real place or if it's a metaphor. I think it's meant to be another city, like another oasis city in the middle of the desert, but it just looked the exact same as the airport. So I honestly just thought it was the airport. Well, no, it must be a different place because now he's standing in front of like a board of directors and he's just showing off Triss being like, look, she's pure. And they're like, cool. Again, because it's a CGI mess, it still all looks the same. So I don't know what happened in that scene. Honestly, didn't pay attention. And then Four runs into Peter wandering the desert, the blood desert. Some little drone sphere scans the other guy's card. Oh, Matthew. I think maybe Pennywise is Matthew. Okay, all right. Well, he gets let out of this, out of the airport zone so he can head back to Chicago. He gets through the camouflage wall. And then Matthew, he comes back to Triss and David. I don't know where he is in the world. Are they at the airport? I don't know. And he's like, oh, the plane crashed. Four went walkabout. He left me at the crash site. And David's like, oh, okay, well, we'll just go find him. And David walks off. And then Triss says to this character that may be Matthew, she's like, Four would never do that. He'd never leave someone at a crash site. And he's like, I know. That was a lie for David's sake. Meanwhile, David's just three steps away. So Four's now walking through the blood to get back to Chicago. The blood rains back. Like, I just don't know why I'm doing this to myself. Half watching it once was hard enough, and now I'm reliving it through talking about it, and I just do not enjoy it. So then Peter, he has a private meeting with David. I thought he was wandering the desert with Four not that long ago, but now he's back. He's back at the Bureau, and David says, hey, Peter, I need your help in Chicago. And Peter's like, can do, boss. And then we cut to, through Caleb looking in the pod, that Peter's in Chicago. He beat Four to Chicago, even though Four had that huge head start. Now Peter's talking to Evelyn. How did he get there so quick? And so the big deal is Peter's brought a weapon to help Evelyn win her war. And it's just a fucking serum. It's the memory wipe serum. I don't even think the death serum comes into play in this one. It's just like the memory wipe serum's the big MacGuffin that we've got to deal with. And so now Caleb, he's getting Triss and he's like, you got to see this. Come into my pod. And I don't know if she's got TiVo in this pod or something, but I think they're fast-forwarding and rewinding and changing scenes to just fill her in. I think they can actually rewind what's going on. I thought it was a live feed. I don't know. But it's here we get the big reveal that Peter's given them the memory wipe serum. And Evelyn's like, oh, wow, that'll be handy. And Evelyn's like, well, I need to see it get used. And so she goes to the prisons where Marcus is and she uses it on Marcus. None of this, like, peace negotiation over the radio like she tried in the books. Here they were like, yeah, all right, we'll just wipe your memory, Marcus, see if it works. And Evelyn, she's fucking cold ass. She was really happy holding that gas mask up to his face, shooting him up with the memory serum. So yeah, it's an airborne serum, this one. I don't know. Maybe it's liquid in the book and it's airborne here, but it was airborne in the book as well. I don't know. There's multiple versions of the serum. And then his mind gets wiped. So that's a wrap on Marcus. And Peter's like, works pretty good, yeah? You should use that on the Allegiant. And then Joanna won't even remember that she's not in charge. That's like, thanks for explaining the benefits of a memory wipe. Like, Peter, I think she gets the implications of a full memory wipe. And so then Evelyn says, where'd you get this weapon anyway? And Peter just goes, oh, from David. Just, no discretion. And because Triss is watching this through Caleb's surveillance pod, now she knows that David might be a villain. And it's like, no fucking shit, Triss. And so now Four's locked up in the city. Evelyn's people must have gotten him. He has a little bit of a moment with Evelyn. Doesn't seem like he's just going to appeal to her motherly nature like he did in the book. Anyway, he's a good fighter, so he fights his way out. Until, of course, they outnumber him and Triss is watching him get beaten up. It's like, Triss, get out of that pod and go and do something. She's just sitting in the pod watching all this terrible stuff happen. It's like, gets to steppin', Triss. And so she goes up to David and she's like, David, I don't really agree with you, like, memory wiping people and stuff. And he's like, yeah, I don't care. And she says, you know what, David, you've been watching me since I was a child, but you don't even know me at all. And he's like, what? Like, I don't really care about you as a person, Triss. I don't care if you don't like what I'm doing here. And she's twigging that he's going to use the memory serum on all of Chicago for some reason. And so she just says to him, well, David, I'm going to take your spaceship and fly to Chicago. And he says, you can't fly. And she says, watch me. And so I bet you're thinking like, yeah, Triss probably doesn't know how to fly a plane. And why is she announcing to David that she's going to steal his spaceship? Like, why is this dialogue so corny? And then she just goes into the spaceship, presses a few buttons, and it goes like, autopilot turned on. And so now she can fly a fucking spaceship. What? When did she learn how to do that? I missed it. I missed when she went to flight school for spaceships. And so she picks up Caleb and Christina, and then they fly over to Chicago. And so then they send three ships after her that just start nudging her a little bit. David says, just nudge them a little bit. The autopilot will guide her down safely. So he knows that autopilot exists, so he doesn't know. So I don't know why he was so confident that she wouldn't know how to fly a plane. Anyway. I guess he thought she wouldn't know where the button for the autopilot was, but I guess it was an obvious button. Anyway, so they start nudging her and she's like, I know, I'll just override the autopilot. So she just overrides it and then crashes to the ground. Like, what the fuck is going on? So she's crashing on the red planet. Oh, and the big plot point is David's plane is the only plane that can go through the camouflage wall. Why? I don't know. Why he built in a failsafe that he can go through the camouflage wall, like, you don't need to go through the camouflage wall, David. Why did you specify that in the design? So, okay, now Triss is full on flying the plane. She was pretty much crashed to the ground, but now she's got liftoff and she's heading for the wall and they're like shooting at her. I thought she was important and like genetically pure and we needed her genes, but now they're shooting at her while she's stolen a spaceship. Oh, and then once she's on the other side of the camouflage wall heading towards Chicago, she's able to turn her spaceship into like a Wonder Woman jet. And it's also transparent, or it's camouflaging. So now she's driving around Chicago in a spaceship and no one can see her because it's camouflaged. I don't know what the fuck. I don't know how to explain it more than I'm explaining it, but I guess she just flew over the fence. And so I guess also in that spaceship, in David's spaceship, there was backup uniforms for Christina and Triss to wear in their size, because then they walk out of the ship like with a gun and like six of those little disc drones and fully kitted out in a little blue uniform. So yeah, thank God David's stocking uniforms in their size on his personal ship. And so they just wander in the halls of, I don't know, Erudite, where the factionless are, and they just throw on those little disc drones at everyone. There's a little bit of a battle, but They're clearly overpowered with their little discs, all these little drones that can put up bulletproof shields in front of them as soon as it senses a bullet coming towards them. So yeah, they do fine and they beat the factionless who are trying to defend whatever fucking headquarters they're in. Oh, they're trying to break Four out because he's in prison? I don't know. And so then Peter's talking to Evelyn, and because he's honestly the worst, he's, I think, trying to push David's agenda to get Evelyn to spread the memory serum to everybody except for them because they're in like a vacuum sealed vault or something. I don't know. So David's plan was just to convince Peter to convince Evelyn to release the memory serum on everybody. Like, okay, sure. Sounds like a great plan, David. But Evelyn seems to be like okay with it. She's like, all right, sure. Then Triss and Tobias, they come up to the vault, which is see-through. All the doors and walls in this fucking movie are see-through just so people can have conversations between them. And so he's like, what are you doing? And she's like, oh, I'm probably going to use all this memory serum against the Allegiant. And then Triss is like through the wall being like, actually, it won't just target the Allegiant. It'll also target the whole city. And she, okay, so no, she's shocked by that because she's like, what? And Triss is like, yeah, whatever Peter said, it must be a lie. But like, Evelyn, how did you think it would just target Allegiant? Like, what mechanism did you think would foster that? Like, what? So now she's regretting it and she's like, oh no. She's like, oh no, I can't wipe everyone's minds. That'd be nuts. So she goes to stop it and, well, she does. She puts her hands on a button and then Peter, he's like, well, and he just shoots Evelyn. And I was like, well, if you had a gun, why wouldn't you just shoot it before she stops the button? But then apparently, okay, the button didn't matter at all because then he's pressing the button. So I don't know what her pressing the button did to stop it. Anyway, so Peter shot Evelyn and he's like, I hope you're watching, David. Hope you're happy with me. I just shot Evelyn and I pressed the button. So then the serum starts getting released. Like, oh my fucking God. And it's coming out of canisters like all throughout the city. I don't know when these canisters were installed, but the whole city is getting filled with this orange smoke. And David's like, woohoo, he's in his little pod watching. So stupid. And everyone's coughing, being like, oh no, memory serum. And there's some background soldiers are like, don't breathe, just stop breathing. It's like, well, how's that possible, background soldier? Oh, so stupid. Okay, so Caleb, he's now in the spaceship and he's troubleshooting where all this orange vapor's coming from. I don't know, he's gotten into the schematics of the city somehow and he's going to shut down the ventilation system. And Triss is talking to him on a walkie-talkie, like, come on, Caleb, you can do it, Caleb. And he's like, all right, I'm going to get rid of the ventilation system. And then Peter's a dum-dum because he assumed that he was in like a vapor-proof vacuum-sealed vault. But then they start pumping the memory serum through the floor and he's like, oh no. So then he has to open the door to escape the memory serum, letting Triss and Four in. And so that like lets them stop the serum. I don't know. And all the serum smoke is just like collected on the floor. Like, it never billows up. So everyone's just running, trying to get away from it. And it's like, yeah, you're fine. It's stuck on the floor. I don't think this is a very effective memory vapor. Because then, like, Caleb's, like, running through the building, walking through little wisps of memory smoke. Not affected. Oh, I just really want this movie to end. So, yeah, okay, let's just skip forward. They stop it somehow. And then everyone else from Chicago, they just like come out and they're like, woof, that would have been rough if we were really close to the ground, but luckily we were able to outrun the smoke and just go inside. Because then you've got shots of like people just walking outside being like, woohoo, the smoke's cleared, we're fine, we've got all our memories. So okay, too easy. And so then Triss is like, well, that was a bloody treat, let's get a message to David, I want him to know that I mean business. So then we don't see this, but Caleb must presumably, like, record Triss making a big speech because, you know, she loves to make a big fucking speech. And then they go to the roof with, like, Joanna and Uriah. I don't know where they came from, but the core characters are on the roof. And then Caleb somehow projects that video that Triss took, that little vox pop, onto all of the walls of the city. And so now you've just got Triss given a big story about how the factions were made to divide us, but blah, blah, blah. There's a world outside of the compound, blah, blah, blah. She's talking as if they know all this context, but they're not as like clued in as she is. She's talking about David, and I bet the people like are downstairs, like on the streets, looking up at her, face on the wall, thinking like, who the fuck's David? And so while she's given this voiceover, Peter is back at the camouflage wall and he can't get through. They're not letting him back out into the outside world, which is funny. I don't know how he got over the fence, but now he's at the fucking wall. And then Caleb, he's rigged David's spaceship with explosives and has sent it to go to the camouflage wall. I don't know where he got these explosives. I don't know how he rigged that all up. But Peter's having a meltdown at the camouflage wall, and then the spaceship comes. It crashes into the wall. The people on the roof watch it, including Evelyn. I guess Evelyn's on the team now. And I guess that punctured a hole in the camouflage wall, so Peter's now able to run through it. And meanwhile, Triss's dumb little video message is still going on. And she says, to those beyond the wall, because I know you're listening. And it's like, babe. Like, they may be listening, but you're not projecting it outside of the city. You're talking to the people inside the city. Like, know your target audience. And she says, this is our home and it always will be. And then we pan over and David's watching them on the roof. He's with them on the roof because he's watching in the little pod machine, and we just see that he's watching and he gives Triss a little side eye. And that's the end of the movie. So it's like, cliffhanger, never to be resolved. What a waste of 2 hours that was. That was just such a fucking waste of time. And I usually like covering the movies because they're kind of fun to watch. They're kind of camp. Like the Twilight movies, you can still get a lot of enjoyment out of, like because of how silly and fun they are. This was just dreadful. Worst movie I've ever seen. So that's a wrap on the Divergent series. What a nightmare. Terrible, terrible execution. And I never have to read it or watch it ever again. Woohoo! So next week, it's Chapter 1 of Midnight Sun, baby. Let's do it. Let's do it. Let's see how different his perspective is to Bella's. It better be different. It better be. Like, I don't really have any interest in what he was thinking during the whole prophase, like, biology class lesson. So if I have to relive that again, I'm not going to be that jazzed, but I am looking forward to not talking about a legion anymore, so let's leave it there. I'll see you guys next week. Bye.
Send your burning thoughts, frustrations, and grievances on this latest chapter of this shitty book to breakingdownpod@gmail.com or on Twitter @podbreakingdown and Instagram @breakingdownbadbooks. You can visit www.breakingdownbadbooks.com for all the listen links, contact information, merch, and more. To support the show on Patreon and gain access to exclusive ad-free bonus episodes, visit patreon.com/breakingdownbadbooks. Ratings and reviews on your preferred podcast platform are also a fun, free way to support the show. Breaking Down Bad Books is hosted by me, Nathan Brown, who you can follow on Instagram and Twitter @NathanBrown90. Thanks for listening and happy reading.
Hold up. What was that? Boring. No flavor. That was as bad as those leftovers you ate all week. Keke Palmer here. And it's time to say hello to something fresh and guilt-free. HelloFresh. Jazz up dinner with pecan-crusted chicken or garlic butter shrimp scampi. Now that's music to my mouth. HelloFresh. Let's get this dinner party started. Discover all the delicious possibilities at HelloFresh.com.
Even when we're on a budget, we still deserve nice things. Quince is a place to scoop up stunning high-end goods for 50 to 80% less than similar brands. They have buttery soft cashmere sweaters starting at $50, luxurious Italian leather bags, and so much more. Plus, Quince only works with factories that use safe, ethical, and responsible manufacturing. Get the high-end goods you'll love without the high price tag with Quince. Go to quince.com/style for free shipping and 365-day returns.
Acast powers the world's best podcasts. Here's a show that we recommend.
I'm Ina Garten. Welcome to Be My Guest, the podcast. One of the best gifts you can give friends is spending time together. But what's even better than that? Cooking with them. On Be My Guest, the podcast, new friends and old stop by my barn for some conversation and great cooking. We talk about food, life, and everything in between. Listen to Be My Guest, the podcast with me, Ina Garten, and join us wherever you get your podcasts.
Acast helps creators launch, grow, and monetize their podcasts everywhere. Acast.com.